You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome back to an all-new episode of Surf Splendor. I am your host, David Scales, bringing you an episode of Surf News for January 11th, 2017. It's actually our first show of 2017, so Happy New Year. Huge news, well, I don't know huge, but news broke today just after Scott and I got finished recording our conversation. And that is that Paul Speaker of the WSL, the CEO for the WSL, is actually stepping down from his position. The WSL is owned by a company called Zozee, and Zozee is owned by a guy named Dirk Zift. So he's the money behind the purchase of the WSL and all the reformation and changes that they've had in the recent years. So Dirk Zift is going to actually operate as the interim CEO until they hire somebody. I guess they're currently looking. But Paul Speaker does have shared ownership in the WSL. So he's going to retain that ownership percentage. I'm not sure. I have no idea how that what the agreement is. But he's going to retain his ownership position. He will just be stepping down as CEO. So that's the fresh news. I have a link to the WSL's press release that they just sent out today. It's on surfsplendorpodcast.com. It's where you can also find all past episodes of this show completely archived for completely free. And you can also leave a comment about today's show on today's show page. There's a comment section. So check that out. I'll also post all the videos that we discussed in this show and links to the articles, imagery, all that sort of stuff. So check that out. And then you can follow us on social media at Surf Splendor. So without further ado, I will pitch to my conversation with Scott Bass. I hope that you enjoyed today's show. And then I'll be back at the end to sign us off. Thank you.
Run down and lied to. Welcome, everybody, down the line, Surf Talk Podcast. Scott Bass, David Lee Scales on this January 11th, 2017. David, welcome.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. Glad to be here at the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center, surfingheritage.org. It's where we record the show, the Smithsonian of Surfing.
This is correct. The Smithsonian of Surfing. We sit in the library now, surrounded by lots and lots of history, books, magazines, newspapers, videos, posters. It's all here.
I feel like my surf IQ is raised just by sitting in this room, Scott.
Why, yes, it is.
This is our first show of 2017.
Wow.
Welcome. Welcome into the new year, Scott.
Yes.
You know, I meant to ask you last time. I think we recorded on December 30th, or was our last show. Do you do New Year's resolutions?
I kind of do, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Can you discuss them openly?
Yes, I can. I can discuss them openly.
Other than your resolution to not burn fellow surfers,
right?
Yeah,
right. Not cut off hipster gram icon,
right?
My New Year's resolution is kind of boring because it's sort of that standard one, but I'm trying to get into better shape.
Yeah, that is pretty boring, actually.
Yeah, it is. You know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, yeah, that's everybody's, you know. But well, I am, you know, trying to do some stuff. I got my little TRX bands.
And oh, you did?
I had them for a while, but I've kind of dusted them off.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because I hate when whatever the new resolution is requires a new purchase as well. Right. And there's 15 other purchases in the garage that haven't been used yet. Right. So I'm glad to hear you're dusting it off rather than, you know, adding to the pile.
Yeah, I actually got on like a cheesy beach cruiser that was in my side yard and rode it up some hills and started to get some cardio going. And then wow. I dusted off the TRX straps.
Wow.
And got into the TRX workout. And I've got a little pouch, you know, a little paunch. Little, like, I got that 3-month pregnancy look on, and I just need to clean that up and get the cardio going and strengthen the core and do all the things that we should all do. It's embarrassing to try to go into a workout facility or a gym in January, you know, because
yeah.
you just have that deer in the headlights, like, they're like, here he comes, let's sign him up for 5 years. You
know? Yeah.
So instead, I'm kind of trying to do it on my own.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I maybe shouldn't be admitting this or bragging about it, but I've literally never stepped foot in a gym in my life.
Right.
Like, I've never actually been in one. And at this point, now it's just a record that I don't want to break. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like,
right.
I've gone 35 years. I can't, even though I'd like to get more fit, I can't go in a gym now. I've been in yoga studios. I've been in kind of gym adjacent facilities, but never to a proper gym. But like you and I both, we kind of have a similar physique and I think good genetics where we're not really ever going to get super overweight and we're pretty active anyways. So the difference between being out of shape and being in shape for you and I isn't that huge. I think subtle adjustments will get you right back on track.
Right. We've got a pretty good foundation. And, you know, for you, just lifting that chop hop hairdo of yours is going to help. Like your strength in your neck and stuff like that.
It has, really.
Yeah.
I feel
trapezes. Yeah.
Exactly.
Trapezes.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going for, actually.
Right.
The chop hop today has been unwashed and uncombed even. I brought it like out of its raw element for you.
It's chopping and hopping like never
all
before.
All at once. I'm going for the full 360 chop hop, not just the 180 like reverse and then you spin back around.
It's a wonderful hairdo.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes.
You hyped up on oolong right now?
No. I didn't have any tea this morning, actually. I rushed out of the house, had one cup of coffee.
Okay, good. You can have tea later. I like how your Instagram feed, at Boardroom Show, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like a... I don't know. It's like a food blog now more than it is a surf related. You got to change the name.
Yeah.
I've seen you cooking steaks on there. I've seen you brewing loose leaf.
Yeah. There's this tea that's called Milk Reserve Oolong.
I saw that.
You saw that, right? From the tea gallery. You can only get it from the tea gallery in San Diego.
Okay.
I've got to bring some in for you because it's mind-blowingly buttery and smooth and... And we're talking about tea here, right? I understand we're talking about tea here. But as far as tea goes, this is a totally like different level of flavor. And you're going to be blown away and stoked.
Well, I saw it and I saw that you mentioned loving it. And yeah, I was intrigued. I wanted to ask you actually to get some for me. Why is it called milk?
I don't know exactly why, but there's... I don't know.
But it's not like there's milk involved in the making of it or something.
No,
okay.
No.
Got it.
But you can get it from the tea gallery, you know, like if you go to Google Tea Gallery San Diego, we just bought ours online and had it shipped to us. So
are they our sponsor for this show?
No.
I feel like you've mentioned their name multiple times.
The tea gallery, no, but they should be. The tea's expensive.
Yeah. My last cup was 5-year-aged Pu'er tea.
Wow.
Have you had that?
Yeah, well, I think actually the Milk Reserve, no, the other one that I like is a Pu'er, but yeah, mm-hmm. I've had Pu'er.
But aged? 5-year age.
No, I have not had a 5-year aged Pu'er.
I would love to educate you about it, but I don't even know what the benefits are or what the process is. But it's loose leaf and it's real dried out looking, like almost looks like a clove more than a tea leaf.
Here's the thing I can tell you is that all tea leaves are the same. A tea leaf is a tea leaf is a tea leaf. And what makes the tea leaves different is the amount of time that they're cracked and cured in the sun. Mm. So a white tea leaf, isn't cracked or cured in the sun at all. It's picked and it's dried and that's it. And then as you go up in darkness in tea leaves, like if, say, an Earl Grey black tea leaf has been cracked and put in the sun. And then during that process, it oxidizes. Thank you. And that's what creates the deeper, darker teas and the more caffeinated teas.
Okay.
So an oolong has just a little bit of time in the sun. A pu'er has a little bit more than an oolong. Then you've got the deep, darker teas, the black teas.
Interesting.
But a tea leaf is a tea leaf is a tea leaf. And the other fascinating fact, perhaps fascinating, perhaps boring, is that the tea bush and or tree has as much to do the people, you might ask, why don't we grow tea here in the North American continent? And you can, but the really good teas have this really incredible root system that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. So those civilizations like in China and in other parts of East Asia that are known for teas, it's because their tea bushes and trees have been around forever.
Yeah.
And so their root system is just incredible. And you need at least 100 years to get a good tea bush system going. So you can see why here we wouldn't cultivate our land in hopes of a 100-year harvest.
Yeah, same thing with wine. You know, it's like the deeper the roots or the more intricate the roots, the more variety of soil type and nuance it's in contact with. So it's pulling all these interesting new, characteristics
nutrients.
Out of the soil, nutrients. Right. And then there's also an element of just harmony. Like the longer the plant's been in the earth, the more harmony it has with the earth.
Wow.
Yeah. The French would call it terroir.
I sense a seance coming.
Dude, we just did 9 minutes on tea.
Oh, shit. We are so sorry.
We'll cut this part of the show out.
Holy crap.
Dude, so we have to, though, because the surf's been so crap.
It has been bad. I mean, it's been small, right?
Yeah, small and it's rainy now.
Small and rainy. And there is a little bit of hope here coming up for Southern California.
Dude,
I know we have
hope.
A lot of listeners outside the Southern California area. So they're going, oh, God. Last thing I need is a SoCal surf report from Bass, but
yeah, lamenting the woes of Southern California.
The North Pacific, the jet stream, right? As I mentioned before, the jet stream, 30,000-foot level winds, which steer and help produce the surface level storms, low pressures that create storms and gales, which create wind. Anyway, the jet stream is kind of in a good space right now for at least the next week where it's flowing along. It's not split. The jet stream isn't split. It's one solid jet across the Pacific, which is really good for the formation of surface level storms, therefore creating wind and surf for us eventually.
Okay. Well,
yes.
Let's hope this rain
boring, man.
Stops.
We've talked tea. We've talked boring meteorology.
Jet stream.
Yes.
Wah, wah. We mentioned on this last show, I proposed the idea of surfing together on New Year's morning.
Yeah, where were you, bro?
Yeah, I know. Seriously, I blew it. For listeners, we did not surf together. We still never have. And
were you hungover or what's the deal? Because I was out there. I texted you. I showed up. Yeah, you were hung.
I don't want to call
super
it hungover.
Right. You were hungover. You woke up at 9:30. I had already dried off and had texted you like 10 times going, where the hell are you?
Dude, I went to bed at 3:30. And then, yeah, I did wake up around 9:30. I will say, just to start off, I stand by every decision that I made during that 24-hour period. I made good decisions, and I'm very happy with them. And, yeah, we didn't get to surf together, but the waves were crappy anyways, right?
Yeah, it wasn't It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
You're glad you didn't go out.
Exactly. Yeah. So the night before, I kind of got an assessment on it, and I'm like, you know what? If I'm up, I'm up. If not, I'm not going to push it. And when I woke up at 9:30, I saw your text. I actually texted you back, and you replied right away, so I knew that it wasn't good because you were already out of the water.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry for listeners that we hyped that up, and we have no stories to tell. Although I do have some stories from that night.
I surfed like crap, I can tell you that.
Oh, really?
I was cold, the waves were small, and things were not going good.
Man, I wish.
That was one of the sessions that made me go, I got to get in shape. Because
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I have felt out of shape as well, and I just ride a longboard instead. And that cures a lot of that ego.
Well, that's what I've been riding. I've been riding the 11-foot Andrini. I've been surfing just 1 to 2 feet of surf, small little peelers at various reefs around the North County, and just trying to stay in shape, you know. If nothing else, it keeps me moving, keeps the cardio going, which is one of my goals.
Mm-hmm. Getting in the cold water, too, I think has some therapeutic benefits, you know. Like this past weekend, I surfed. It was actually super clean conditions. It was 1.5 feet, maybe. So I just longboarded, but it was beautiful out. And again, the cold water just kind of shocks your system into shape. And yeah, so I felt good about it, even though the waves were crappy. Scott.
Yes.
Would you like to lead off surf news today, or would you like me to?
I've got some surf news, which is I don't know how great of news it is, but I want to tell the listeners about it.
I want to hear
Bird Huffman. Yeah. You know Bird Huffman from Bird's Surf Shed?
I do.
He is leading an attempt to set a world record, the Guinness Book of World Records, most people on one wave. We tried this last year.
Yep.
And we failed, but we gave it a good effort, and we're doing it again this year. It's called the One Wave Challenge. And Bird is the guy that's in charge of herding all the cats and getting it all together and making sure all the Guinness Book people are there and that the protocols are followed so that we can, in fact, set a world record.
You have to pay the Guinness people to fly out to record it, right?
The whole thing's quite an ordeal.
Yeah.
And so this thing takes place on January 21st, which is 10 days from today. It's at La Jolla Shores in San Diego. And Bird has asked me and you to sort of help. Basically, Bird needs some support. He needs some logistics people. Because not only do you need 200 and something people in the water all riding the same wave at the same time for at least 5 seconds, which is really hard to do. Mm-hmm. You also need people on the beach sort of, well, counting those people to make sure they're all up at the same time. And basically, yeah, herding the cats into the right place and getting on the bullhorn and getting everyone. It's a logistic nightmare, and we need help. And so if you want to help us out and you live in San Diego County and you're listening to the podcast, we want your help. You're going to get breakfast and coffee, and there'll be music. It's a fun event. It's all part of raising money for local charities in San Diego through the Century Club, which is associated with the Farmers Insurance Golf Tournament. So this whole thing ties into the Century Club and local charities in San Diego. So anyway, I guess if you're listening and you're like, yeah, I'd like to help out in the Guinness Book of World Records, most surfers on one wave, show up at Bird's Surf Shed on Wednesday the 18th at 6 p.m. That's where the volunteers will have a meeting with Bird about what to do and how to do it. And then the following Saturday morning at La Jolla Shores, be there at 7 in the morning. The whole thing will only take about 2.5 hours. It'll be over by 10 or 11.
Okay. What do you know what the exact number of people is? What's the record?
I don't. We should probably be able to Google it.
I just did, yeah. I mean, it's a Surfline article referencing what you just talked about. The first record was 110 people in Cape Town, South Africa.
I think that's the record that stands.
But
I
didn't
believe.
We do this in Huntington Beach recently?
Well, that was most people on one board.
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
This
I
is
see.
Everybody's on their own board
okay.
riding a wave.
Oh, that is difficult.
Yeah. This
the
is
Huntington,
really...
Okay, so the Huntington Beach one is what I thought you were talking about this whole time. I thought you were trying to beat that record.
Oh, no.
Okay, got it. So, yeah, in South Africa, 6 years ago, 110 people rode a single wave to shore. So you got to get 111. And it took 18 attempts on that particular day.
18 at sea. See, after about, from my experience last year doing this, people get tired. First of all, you need people that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And even if you get 190 people that know what they're doing, then you got to get them all on the same page. I think last year we had some beginners and some newbies that just thought, oh, it'll be cool to go out and check it out. And they signed up for it. And it was like, you know,
yeah.
You've got to be more than a capable surfer just to go 19 or 20 attempts and stay on the same wave with the person right next to you.
Oh, yeah.
For 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And yeah, so.
Because 120 people covers a lot of
distance.
Ground. Yeah, a lot of distance.
Width of the.
I was going to say ground, but it covers a lot of water.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you kind of need a ground swell. You can't
yeah.
have wind swell. It needs to be a long line of white water that breaks and everyone
Dude.
Catches the same white water and stands up. And you know what? We may pull this off. We may not. We are anticipating doing it, and but we're going to try no matter what. And so if you can be at Bird's on Wednesday night at 6 p.m., that's the 18th, and then Bird will tell us what we need to do to help support this. Again, this isn't to be one of the surfers. This is to be part of the support staff.
Got it.
That's really what we need. I think they've signed up all the surfers already. I'm not even sure about that. But
well, I rode that river boar, the tidal boar, in Bordeaux, France, last year. And it was kind of a similar scenario that you're talking about where there were some beginners. You know, it's literally, it's one wave. And you just like, you got to paddle out in the river and you all catch the wave together. And it goes for a long distance. But the beginners on the wave are really just taking up space. It's like, dude, get out of here. Because if you get in my
way. Dude, get out of here.
Pretty much. This is back to our conversation.
Dude, get out of here. Like, you're not allowed to have the same amount of fun as I am.
No, you're going to ruin my fun because you're going to wipe out. But
isn't that elitist?
No, because I'm not going to ruin your fun. I'm not going to get in your way.
How do you know you're not ruining? You're ruining my fun by saying, dude, get out of here.
I know. I'm just kidding. Right. But it was. It was like the beginners were actually a detriment to the overall group, you know? But whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't know that was happening. But so I guess you do have to fly the Guinness judges out, because could you imagine if Guinness financed every Yahoo who like wanted to set a world record for like the world's largest potato in Idaho, you know, and then the Guinness guys fly out from England and they're like, nope, this is the 15th largest that we've ever measured. So we're flying back home on our own dime. Like that would be expensive to do. So they have the people who are hosting the event actually pay for the Guinness judges to go out and do the judging.
Yes.
So that they're not left holding the bag.
Right.
Do you want to hear about Gabriel Medina's Surf Institute?
Yes, I do.
Did you know about this?
No.
Okay. Brazil's first surf-specific learning institution.
Surf-specific learning institution. Okay.
Yes, sir. The modestly named Gabriel Medina Institute will be built in Mauritius. Is that how it's pronounced?
Mauritius?
Not Mauritius. That's an island off Madagascar.
Oh, this is
Mauritius.
In Brazil?
It's in Brazil. Yeah. Okay. It's the wave-rich Far East suburb of Sao Paulo that Gabriel calls home. And it'll welcome 38 Brazilian teen surfers between the ages of 10 and 16 who are selected based on their performance at the Mauritius Surf Association 2016 Medina Circuit. Students will be coached by Gabriel and Gabriel's stepfather, Charlie. Simone Medina, who's Gabriel's mother, and will also she'll also preside.
What does Simone Medina do? What does she do? She coaches?
Well, she's going to preside over the institute, so she's probably running the show.
She's the cook.
Well, that's sexist of you, Scott. But
I mean, what?
You know,
okay. So she
women
oversees.
Are allowed to do
she oversees
things.
The lodging, the
Who
logistics,
yeah.
the return, the airfare, like the pick up, the transfer from the airport. She.
Who knows?
She, doesn't say what she does. She just
presides
runs it.
Over
she
the
presides.
Institute.
She's the maternal.
I think they give her a scepter and she just waves it over and tells people what to do. Tells people where to go. Among the surfers who made the cut.
Yes.
Gabriel Medina's sister, Sophia Medina. I didn't even know that there was a Sophia Medina. So
that sounds a little like nepotism.
A little bit.
She just made the cut in her last, and it just happens to be her sister.
Right. Well, it's also a tax write-off.
Well, like, of course it is. This whole thing kind of reeks of a tax write-off.
It's like a $3 million Brazilian dollar investment that, you know, you can in it would norm funds that you'd normally pay taxes with. You can obviously
you can set up an institute for higher learning
exactly,
and surf.
Well, exactly.
Right. So. You know, but let them do it. Who cares?
No, I'm not against it at all. It brought up for me a bigger question, which is something that I've thought about often over the years as we've seen surf coaches become more and more prominent, is just how coachable is surfing?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we were talking last time about Jordy, Julian, and Kolohe as the three guys that if they're going to win a world title, they need to step up and do it. They're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years into their – this is like – it's now's the time. You know, it's like – you know, Aaron Rodgers wins a Super Bowl, you know, it's 8 years into his career. You know, like, you know what I'm saying, right? This is the time. So then you say to yourself, well, let's get them a good coach, you know? And so what does that mean, right? Because at that level, they are doing everything on the wave that they need to do. Mm-hmm. And I believe that a good coach, it's like for golf, like a golf coach can't play better golf than mm-hmm. the guy that's hitting the ball, but he can see when the guy's going awry a little bit. So I think at certain levels, at the highest level, it's a mental thing, like the way Belly was with Kelly Slater. He was just somebody that Kelly could turn to and go, dude. And basically a really good coach can call you on your bullshit and go, hey, you are blowing it. And I don't care if you fire me for saying it because I don't have any skin in the game. You're screwing up. I care more about you winning a world title than my paycheck. And that's the sign of a good coach or a good caddy or somebody that can go, you're blowing it right now. And this is what you need to do mentally. Can I get you in shape mentally? This is what you need to do. And so on this level, Gabe Medina's institute level, there's probably a lot of competitive stuff that Charlie perhaps can tell you to do. Like, don't be impatient. Time the sets. Watch the heats beforehand. See where the guys that are getting good scores, which bank or which reef or which part of the wave they're surfing. Is that happening in the last three heats building up to your heat? If so, we want to work on mimicking what their success is. Let's do what they're doing. There's a lot of things, and a lot of that is mental stuff. It's like, hey, dude, when you put on the jersey and you paddle out, don't forget what I just told you.
Right.
You know, you have to main. We saw that with Kanoa right at Pipeline.
Yep.
That heat where he beat Kelly Slater, he was patient. He just stuck to his game.
55 seconds left.
That's from years and years and years and years. That kid's been surfing competitively, and it's second nature to him now. You know, and that's why I can see him going a long distance. That heat, and we talked about this last time, but I will say that heat taught you and I a lot about that guy's competitive maturity.
Yep.
You know, and then you get guys like, I'll bring up, for instance, Taylor Knox is the classic example. You know, he was on tour for 20 years. He had no competitive maturity. He's like, oh, good wave. I don't care. I just want to get tubed on this wave. I don't care if it's not the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
And I'm being a bit bombastic and exaggerating in that example. But I'm not the only one that would say that Taylor Knox was not competitively mature.
His nickname on tour was Bonehead.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Because he made bonehead mistakes repeatedly. The best surfer on tour that just wasn't winning heats.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. So let's break down further the discussion that you brought up last time. Those three guys, Julian Wilson, Chloe, and Jordy. Jordy brought on Chris Gallagher as a coach.
When? For this next season coming?
Last year.
Oh, okay.
That's how he got second place last year. Or that could be argued that's
that paid off.
Contributed to
Chris Gallagher is a great example of a guy who Jordy views as above him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who he respects, who I'm sure that Gally can go, dude, you blew that last heat, or way to go. You know, he can say what he feels in his heart rather than being worried about a paycheck.
Well, interestingly, Gally has his life and his act together in ways that Jordy maybe doesn't. And Gally doesn't have the natural ability that Jordy does,
Well, nobody has Jordy's ability, but Chris was a very established competitive surfer.
First, I think, Santa Cruz surfer to make the world tour.
Yeah, he was on the WC.
So he won Margaret's, I think. So great surfer in his own right, but by no means a world-class talent. Like, he was at the bottom of the sea. He's a good surfer. But again, what I'm
like
saying
100,000 is that... 100,000 other guys.
But what I'm saying is the reason that he got to the level that he was at was because of the structure that he built in his life and his work ethic. That allowed him to achieve results. Whereas Jordy got there based on raw talent, and now he could use some of the structure that Gally has.
Right.
And when I say Gally has his life together, what I mean is he's very concerned about diet. He actually shapes surfboards.
Yeah, he's a surfboard shaper.
And he's a good shaper. So,
by the way, we say Gally like we know him. I don't know the guy. I probably shouldn't use his nickname like he's my bro and I have him on my phone here.
Yeah, so, and he moved to Hawaii a number of years ago. So, like, he's established himself as a coach for, like, a lot of young, up-and-coming pro amateur guys.
Yeah.
So Jordy was smart to kind of rely on that. And it was great to see that Gally was able to benefit somebody of world-class talent, not just the pro junior guys. So I was glad to see that happen. And I think that, again, he's not, like you said, not necessarily teaching Jordy about form or technique. He's just like, here's what boards you should be riding, or here's the adjustments in the boards that you're riding that you should be making. Here's how you can adjust your diet. And by the way, diet is something, when you're going to South Africa 1 week and then Brazil the next and then Fiji the next, like, diet is a concern. You can get wrecked.
No, I totally agree. And so, Kelly speaks to that a lot. And you're right. You mentioned all these things that Chris can do for him, but the biggest thing...
Gally.
Chris Gally. I'm going to call him Chris. Is at that level, again, is when we've seen Jordy surf really well in heats, and this goes... This speaks to anyone. You have to be loose, relaxed, having fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, in life, if you're having fun, you're doing well. Like, your day in life is going to go good if you're feeling good about yourself.
Your brain just functions more efficiently that way.
And the, and Kelly really sort of epitomized that with that year of letting go when, yeah, when he was comboed by Bruce at in Tahiti and he came back to get two tens. And he had said to himself, I'm just going to let go of it all and just surf and have fun. And all of a sudden it clicked. And that's the headspace that Jordy Kolohe and it's this fine line, right? And who's the other guy? Julian.
But Julian, so...
Who's Julian's coach? Well, it's his brother, right? And I think that's a mistake.
No, so Julian, as far as I know, doesn't actually have a coach.
He probably does, we just don't even know.
I don't think he does. I think his brother manages him.
Right, but he's also probably his coach.
And then...
On some level, not officially, but he's the guy that he goes, hey, man... You know, surf that bank instead of this bank.
I don't know that he does, though. Yeah, like,
I don't either.
I think he manages, like, the rental car reservations and hotels and details like that. But I don't think he's giving – I think Jules is a lone wolf in that respect. Now, he has this filmer that he travels with, which I think
– That guy can't be your coach.
Maybe not. And then his wife or girlfriend, fiance, travels with him. But I'm saying he has,
like,
a team.
Who would be a good coach for
him? He has a team around him is what I'm saying. Okay. But I don't think it's the same as a coach. Chloe and Dino – Mike Parsons has been his coach throughout his whole career. And so, again, Parsons is almost the definition of a surf coach. Like, he's the guy who kind of ushered in this era of professionalism and, like, really structured competitive strategy and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if at this point in career, Kolohe maybe needs to shift.
I agree, and I'll tell you. I don't agree, but I will say one thing that concerns me, and I could be very, very wrong about this, because Snips is ultimately qualified. He would be the guy if you were to say, hey, who's going to coach your son? I'd go Mike Parsons.
Of course,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the thing with Mike Parsons and Kolohe is that Mike Parsons is almost his uncle. There's almost a familial thing there because of Mike and Dino's relationship as kids. Like, he's known him since he was born.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so he might be too close to Kolohe. And again, he might not be, or that closeness might be a benefit for Kolohe. I do not know. I'm not an expert regarding what's going on there. But I could see, as you mentioned, that there could be, I'm assuming that there could be a little bit too much closeness. It might be good to bring in an outsider that's like, I don't know you from Adam, but I'm going to straighten out your mental state so that you're ready to go.
And
maybe Parsons can do that. I don't know.
And to be honest, I think that they have spent less time together in recent years. Like, they were traveling everywhere together for a long time.
Well, for a bit, it was kind of like Parsons and Dino were Kolohe's coach. And that was, I think they realized that was problematic.
They did. I've heard Kolohe talk about that, actually. But what another model that seems to have been successful in recent years is bringing on a coach that's specific to a location.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Really?
No.
Why not?
I mean, so really, that's about lining up. That's about landmarks and lining up and knowing the spot. I'm not against that part of it, but I almost feel like these guys are so good. I mean, you can grab a local guy and go, hey, where should I line up? You know, give me some insight. That's one thing. As far as getting your mental space prepared for it, I don't think if a regional coach has anything to do with where your mental space is.
See, I think it's partially to do with the lineup itself, but I think it also has to do with what you just talked about with Kolohe and Snips, which is just get a fresh set of eyes on your surfing. You know, like, yes, you know this spot better, but you're also telling me something. When Kelly went to Margaret River and used Mitch Thorson, like, Thorson's going to...
How did that work out?
Infuse... He got a 10.
On a wave?
On a wave, yes.
I mean, how did he do in the event?
No, I think he made the quarters that year, or maybe the semis.
That's doable. Then that's respectable.
Yeah.
And that would... I would suggest to you that the coach was worthwhile.
But it was the year that he got the 10.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, like, it's just a fresh coaching perspective, I think, has benefit. But maybe Belly was there as part of the team as well. You know, it's not like Kelly got rid of Belly and used Mitch instead. Maybe Mitch was just an add-on. I don't know, but it's all...
Who's the guy that we should get for Julian Wilson?
That's a good question.
Who's the guy? And I really don't know the coaching, you know, scene that well to be able to pick him apart. But one that comes to mind, and this could be a total nightmare, like this could actually not work. But the guy that comes to mind is Derek Hind. Now, I don't even know if Derek gives a crap about it, you know, but he's always the guy that's writing about, like, he seems to be breaking down heats from 19, like, he can break down the Bells event from 1967 and shit like that. Like, he seems to be pretty competitively savvy, and he was a competitive, competitively savvy surfer.
That's a wild card pick.
That is.
I'll give you my pick is Glenn Hall.
Oh, okay. Well, that is a good one.
Glenn Hall.
Does he have the respect? Will Julian listen to Glenn Hall? Will Julian go, okay, yeah, thanks. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what their relationship is, but I do know Glenn proved himself this year by coaching Tyler Wright to her world title and coaching Matt Wilkinson into two wins, the first two wins of the season, and really coaching Matt to the best, obviously, the best finish of his career. If that's not a feather in your cap to take Matt Wilkinson from who we knew him to be to who he became this year, like that says something.
Yeah, he's definitely coach du jour. Like he's the coach that you would think,
in his first year.
Yeah, he's got a world champion and the other surfer is the best result he's ever had, right? Then, is that true?
It is true.
Wilkinson?
Yeah. And then Laura Enever hired him late in the season and then got her best result. I think it might have been at Cloudbreak or something. She got her by far best result in the season with him. So I think he's the guy right now who people should be looking at. And Julian, I mean, that might be the play for Julian.
That seems like a good call.
Yeah.
That seems like a really good call.
Yeah. When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There's a lot of guys out there where you're like, who would be the guy, you know? And you just don't know if they would work for each individual guy. It like basically comes down to, will the surfer respect the coach,
yeah,
you know? And obviously that needs to be understood through the vetting process of the coach.
So. Well, what I always find interesting whenever these coaching stories come up, number one, I always just question, is surfing coachable? But the other thing is, I'm always shocked at who the coach is, almost always. Like Glenn Hall, for example, I had huge question marks about him before he did what he did, because it's like, well, he was the guy who constantly got bumped off tour. He was the guy that
shouldn't even have been on tour, except that he was so stubborn, you know? Like he willed himself on tour. Like, really? That guy's on tour?
Let's be honest. He was the least... He was the least good surfer on tour.
Exactly.
He was the worst surfer on tour. Yet he beat Gabriel Medina at lower, or he made the final with Gabriel Medina at lowers of all places. You know, like he's not a high performance surfer, yet he somehow makes the final. He beat Gabriel at Snapper, you know, in round three. So
he would do these things occasionally. He's mentally prepared.
But when I look at Matt Wilkinson hiring him as a coach, I'm just going, oh my gosh, you're throwing your buddy a bone because he got kicked off tour last year. Like, that's nice of Wilco, but geez Louise, that's a horrible decision.
Yeah.
But then I'm surprised because I'm entirely wrong, of course. I mean, I saw a week before the tour started, I saw Glenn Hall coaching an 11-year-old at Oceanside Harbor while I was surfing. You know what I mean? And I was just like, well, Glenn sure fell from grace.
Were you eavesdropping? Were you like, what's he teaching?
No, I know.
I'd like to hear some of this.
That 11-year-old was ripping.
Have you, by the way, ever surfed in a contest?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. In hunting, like growing up in Orange County.
What, at high school?
Yeah, like teenage level.
What high school did you go to?
I actually Edison? Went to high school inland, no. Oh. At Lucerna.
Oh, you're an inlander.
Yeah. So I was always out of my element, like coming into like Huntington Beach, like, oh man, all these kids like live here and like surf. I never ever did well. I never actually got over the mental barrier of just people watching me surf.
Right.
It shook me, you know. Yeah. Like I couldn't surf.
Yeah.
At any rate,
coaching, it's an interesting thing, you know. There's quite a few coaches out there. Brad Gerlach comes to mind. Sean Madison is a guy that coaches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see him. I think they're at these high school events. There's quite a few.
Oh, yeah.
If they're not parents, their parents are hiring coaches.
Totally. Yeah, there's a lot. Gerlach's an interesting example. So Gerlach's big claim to fame is Connor Coffin. He's worked with Connor. Connor's pretty much whole adult life or late teen adult life. And Ger's known for style. Connor's known for style. And I think that that's one person where you could see, I don't think Ger's really coaching so much about competitive savvy and stuff like that, strategy and savvy. I think that he was coaching Connor on technique and form in a way that Glenn Hall's not coaching Wilco. So, because you could see a lot of Ger influence in Connor Coffin. And I think that it's benefited Connor Coffin. Like Connor is, of course, one of the most stylish, beautiful surfers to watch. So that's an interesting example, kind of an alternative example. Now, I'm going to kind of segue into a different conversation, a gossip conversation.
Uh-oh.
Connor Coffin.
Rumor innuendo.
Connor Coffin. This is official news, actually.
Is he getting married or something?
He's off Hurley.
Connor Coffin's not riding for Hurley anymore.
No. Lifelong.
Is this breaking news that you're just now, that no one else knows about?
No, this was reported a week or two ago. Okay. Miguel Pupo as well is off Hurley.
Is this Hurley's decision or the surfers' decisions?
Don't know. I really don't know. It seems like there's been quite a few Hurley guys that contracts have come up and they've decided.
Sounds like
to
it's
leave.
Hurley's decision then, that Hurley said they're going to trim some.
Maybe.
Trim some of the area.
So Noah Beshin, which is Shane Beshin's son, who actually surfs really, really well. He's probably 14 or 15 now. He's kind of gotten a little bit older. And, he transitioned over to Ruka. Miggy and Connor, as far as I know, are sponsorless at the moment in terms of a main sponsor. I guess Rip Curl is trying to get Connor on board.
Oh, really?
So I think that'd be a good
thing. Where do you get all this info? You don't have to tell me, but...
No. This was all, I think, Stab Magazine reported.
Oh, Stab. Okay. Yeah.
So I think Rip Curl would be a good fit for Connor if Mick Fanning doesn't end up coming back to tour. They could use like a regular foot world title guy or world tour guy. They've got Gabriel Medina and Wilco and potentially Owen Wright when Owen returns, but they don't have a regular footer on tour.
Well, is Mick Fanning coming back?
We don't know yet.
I saw something online that Mick's been spending the majority of his time trying to up his air game. So I swear to God, I'm not kidding you. So that he can.
Good. He so needs
that,
it.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Right. That makes sense. Somebody goes, dude, you know, here's the next step for you. Or you're just going to like be the next Taylor Knox.
Oh, man, you are burning Knoxy.
No, I love that guy's the greatest surfer ever. I love surfing that guy. But I mean, we all got to admit that like most guys in their mid 30s in the year 2005, they didn't have quite the exciting air game that the 19-year-old 130-pound Brazilian kid had.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I saw that
article.
I'm
a huge fan of Taylor Knox.
Oh, I am too.
But if you were to say, hey, there's a guy in his mid-30s that's one of the world's best surfers, but there's one part of his game that's missing, it would be Mick Fanning and his air game needs to be.
Totally.
Same with Joel Parkinson.
Parko used to boost, but yeah, he doesn't really anymore. But yeah, you're right. Not only is he one of the best surfers in his 30s, he's a three-time world champ who can't do airs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like not on the level that the rest of the tour is doing them.
No.
The top guys are doing airs, you know, like.
Yeah, he's not doing them on the level that, like, NSS.
Like, if he does an air, you're like, whoa, Mick Fanning did an air. Better give him a 10.
And it's a straight air.
Yeah, it's a straight air. Like
that one time Kieran Perreault did, like, a double grab, and they gave him an 8. It was, like, the lamest air ever, but it was Kieran, so you had to give him an 8, you know?
Yeah.
It was like Felipe could do a flip and they'll give him a 5. So it's funny. I saw that article on Beach Grit. It was a blood feud. Beach Grit does this recurring series called Blood Feud.
Yes.
And it was a blood feud. Mick Fanning versus Ayers. And I didn't click on it. But now that you said it, I did just click on it.
I didn't even see this on Beach Grit. I don't know where I saw it. But maybe it was Beach Grit. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At any rate, I don't know if it's much of an article, but it's a funny title.
But it is something that you would say, hey, if you are off tour the last year, why not work on that part of your game? Yeah. I mean, that's something that Kelly had done.
I mean, Kelly's a great example of somebody who could have easily just kept doing what he was doing. But we'll see him do airs every year that are among the best airs.
Yeah.
I mean, the double spin that he did in Portugal last year, this year, the alley-oop at Backdoor on a lay day during the pipe event.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that would have been the best.
And New York, when he won. Yeah. Did he win New York? Somebody won New York,
he
did a huge air in New York.
Yeah, he did the huge air in the final against Owen.
He did a huge air at Bell's on the inside. Mick. That was a 360, right?
Yeah, against Mick.
Full spin.
Yeah. I think he had a 10 and like a 9.97. Mick had like 2 9s and he was still comboed.
Yeah.
Mick had like a 9.27 and a 9.67.
That alone should tell Mick Fanning to go learn how to do aerials.
Yeah.
Or just fade into the sunset as the greatest surfer, fat Mr. White Lightning speed guy.
It was a great heat to have a conversation about because Mick surfed Bells to the way Bells should be surfed and subsequently got 2 mid-9s because of it. Like he surfed those waves as good as you can imagine them being surfed. But then Kelly did a freaking helicopter full rotator and got a 10. And it's like, I never expected to see an air done at Bell's, but he did it. And it was so radical, you had to give it a 10.
Like, how does an air at Bell's win the heat?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same as Bruce Irons at Waimea and the Eddy going left and pulling into the barrel. Like, how does a left win you the Waimea?
Because it's that radical.
It's different, you know? Right?
Yeah. And that's so by the way, I wanted to bring this up with the coaching conversation. I have a moral opposition to coaching in that I don't want surfers to become robots who are all following one guy's formula.
Why not? Why does that bother you?
Because I want room for what Bruce did at Waimea, and I want room for what Kelly did at Bells.
There will always be that.
No, because if you're following what your coach said, your coach would never conceive of saying, hey, do a full rotator spin at Bells.
Right, but at that level, the highest of highest levels, he's not going to tell you what to do on the wave face anyway. It's going to be more about, I want you in a free space. I want you having fun. I want you listening to music that you love. I want a song in your head. I want you to go out there and have fun. And that's the space you need to be in.
Yeah.
Win this heat by having the most fun.
Yeah.
And that's going to translate into, oh, look at this little section. I'm going to pop, you know, because you got to be loosey-goosey. You can't be tight and
I agree.
All mentally constricted.
I agree, but you have to imagine that as coaching becomes more and more on the commonplace.
On the junior level, yeah, you're going to be like, dude, don't do an aerial.
The broadest base of that of the triangle is going to be those guys just designing a formula and having 20 kids show up for class and telling them all to do the same thing. And as those kids, you know, get older and matriculate or whatever – going to be robots.
Years ago, that's what it was. I mean, years ago, it was 3 to the beach. I mean, it's so funny. We didn't have Instagram and access to like instant edits and all of that stuff that we have now. And so it was like, you know, Damien Hardman won the world title just, you know, 3 to the beach. It was like an NSSA contest.
Right.
It was basically a high-level NSSA contest. And there was no room for the free surfer to go, yeah, but look at me, because there was none of this Instagram, social media, no internet at that time. So nobody had the ability to go, God, that surfing's kind of lame. You know, like nobody in the industry was going to say it. Everyone's like, oh, he's the best surfer ever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there was outside the box shit happening. Christian Fletcher, for example, was going on. And Christian Fletcher was an outlier. Like for Christian Fletcher to go, hey, my surfing's way better than what these guys are doing. It was sort of like, okay, yeah, let's just dismiss Christian and put him in that corner over there and not pay attention to him because it would disrupt everything. And of course, to continue this train of thought, Christian won the Body Glove Surf About, I think it was, whatever it was called at Lowers, doing crazy aerials and basically flipped off everybody that was like putting their head in the sand.
And going left, which was like, nobody wanted to go left at Lowers, you know?
Probably one of the, definitely a, you know, a turning point, a tipping point. And everyone knew it was the most radical stuff, but the surf industry elite, so to speak, didn't want to admit that, you know, they wanted to keep the same formulas going.
Totally. Well,
we've made all sorts of assumptions here.
One more comment about the gossip and sponsor news. Target had two surfers that they sponsored for the last 5 or 6 years, Chloe Andino and Carissa Moore, and they cut both of them.
Wow. Target.
Yeah, and I know last year in Hawaii, they didn't sponsor House for the first time ever, so that was kind of a harbinger of what was to come. So last year, no House, and then this year they officially, I think maybe their contracts came up, so they didn't renew them.
The soft goods surf industry is, what's going on there? Like, if Target is getting out of the space, then they're saying, you know what, we gave it a run, we didn't do a whole lot, it wasn't a lot of return on my investment, so we're going to pull out of the surf space. I saw online that at the Agenda show in Long Beach, none of the big surf brands were there. I think only one of the big brands, but Rip Curl, Quiksilver, Hurley, I don't know, there was a few others that were all no-shows at the Agenda trade show.
Yeah.
Which I wonder if the surf soft goods industry is sort of suffering a little bit, and it's finally showing. I mean, that would be the last place it would show. If you can't go to a trade show and show your wares to buyers, you're not doing very well.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they've chosen other trade shows. Maybe they're going to be at Surf Expo. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But I did read about it online, and the person that wrote about it online for that Shop Eat Surf website was saying, you know, it's a tough environment, I think, in the retail surf space right now.
And I don't really follow it too closely.
I don't either, because it's not really, doesn't really have anything to do with us.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's not hardcore surf. It's just it's basically the fashion industry.
Yeah.
Masquerading as surf.
It. Yeah. Well, I wanted to revisit a conversation now that we're in the new year that we had midway through last year about surf podcasts, our competitors. In this,
we don't have competitors. Like,
we're in a class of our own.
No, I don't even mean it like that. I don't mean it like, I just mean it like, look, there's room for everybody. You know, the idea that I have to be better than somebody is, I don't know. You know, it's,
that sounds like something somebody would say if they knew they weren't better than the other people.
I don't even listen to any of the other stuff. You know, the podcasts I listen to are,
I know. I'm just messing with you anyways. But let me
I'm sure they are better than ours, quite frankly.
Well, listeners care. Listeners listen to podcasts.
Yeah, well,
and
look,
it
doesn't mean we're not trying to do great shows. It just means that I don't listen to the other stuff. And I don't think there's this idea that there's only one pizza and there's only so many slices in the pizza. There's an infinite amount of pizzas and pizza slices, and you can choose your flavor, and that's fine.
Well, I'm a big fan of margarita, personally. I don't think you can improve upon the margarita.
Okay.
We are the margarita of surf. No, I'm just messing around. So, but we did talk about podcasts because Grind did like the top 7 surf podcasts or whatever, and they really did a poor job researching that.
Because we weren't in it. Or no, you
I
were
was
in it.
You I were was in it. It.
You
weren't.
You were well deserved.
But he just used
I'm
it.
I'm not too stressed about it.
Ben Mundy, who wrote the article, just used it to promote his new podcast
that he was releasing.
Oh, that
right.
was the whole problem.
And then there's this Aki podcast, which is getting a lot of play. And you know why that's getting play? Because that's a Billabong thing.
Well, let me get into it. So let's revisit it. Because at that time when we reviewed those.
Right.
We took a bet and we're like, well, how many episodes do you think each of these guys is going to produce?
Because that's right.
You and I know the work involved and we don't want to show up a lot of the time, but we do. And we have an obligation to our listeners, or we feel an obligation to our listenership. Well, I don't remember what our numbers were, but
it was like 4 or 6. It was a low number on how many Aki would
I guessed Aki would do 10. And Dave Prodan, who is a guest on our show, and he's the VP of communications for the WSL, had just launched his own podcast as well. So we were kind of taking guesses on both of those. So Dave, I actually listened to pretty much, I think I listened to every episode, and I'm sad to say they haven't been updated since September 30th, but they were really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think he did 6 episodes. Really good content. I hope that Dave, maybe he's just taking time off during the holidays or whatever.
Well, it's a busy time of year for him.
Yeah.
Now he has time.
I'd like to see more of Dave's show.
Dave has access.
And he has access, and he had like a really good structure to the show. It was built like an actual radio show.
Yeah.
Where there was like segments that he revisited each time.
Right.
Had alternating guests who like commented on board design, and then and then he'd have like a main guest that they would talk about that guest's life history or whatever. Aki just hit episode 10.
Wow, good for him.
Which is what I suggested.
We should apologize to Aki then.
No, I suggested he would pump out 10 because my estimation was that it was a Billabong project that they just had him do. And I think I was like, you know what? They probably just contracted him for a certain amount to see how it goes. And then they'll decide whether or not to revisit. I guess 10 was
I must have guessed like 3. I remember coming in pretty low going,
yeah,
there's no way Aki's going to do.
Well, if it's just upon Aki to make sure that he produces the content, it won't go that long. But if Billabong's cracking the whip, then maybe it will.
Right.
But here's the thing that I like about Aki is he's got great guests because he's Aki.
No, so they have those guys have access. There's no doubt.
He got Mason Ho.
Yeah.
He had Kelly Slater. He had Mick Fanning, Rabbit Bartholomew, John Florence,
What
Joel
are the questions
Parkinson?
Like? I haven't listened to any of them. Are they?
So that's the thing.
Are they like cutting questions?
No,
or it's like
it's terrible.
Yeah,
it's
see, terrible. That's the problem. Like, why? It's like you've got this diamond and you're just not going to cut it right.
I know. That was my problem too. So each
what would you ask Rabbit, for instance?
I don't put me on the spot.
I mean, but like, so for Rabbit, you know, I would want to know the deepest, darkest moment in Hawaii. And I know he revisited it during the movie The North Shore. But anyway, there's so many great opportunities for great discussions.
Auk has no structure. He doesn't research. So he sits down and he starts riffing. But it's like, and it's interesting. Like, they're worth listening to because you want to hear Mason riff. But it's a really rare opportunity to get some real insight out of these people. And Aki doesn't capitalize on that opportunity.
Yeah.
So for each of these podcasts that I mentioned, I like them for different reasons, but none of them fully capitalize on what they could, you know? Yeah. So Aki has 10 in the vault. A couple of new podcasts have come up in the last 6 months, one of which is called The Kyle Tierman Show, mm-hmm. hosted by, you know, Kyle Tierman, who I interviewed on my podcast. And I thought it was actually a really good interview Kyle delivered. He started his show and he interviews surfers sometimes, but he also interviews activists, you know, from all different parts of the world. So for me, if you haven't listened, it's kind of guest dependent. Like, I'll start listening to the first 5 or 10 minutes. And if the guest is good, I'll continue listening. I think Kyle does a pretty good job. I think he's learning as an interviewer, as you and I probably did, just kind of along the way as we go. So one episode that was really good of his was with Sean Dollar, the big wave surfer. He has 2 Guinness World Records for biggest wave surfed.
And injured himself really bad.
Yeah, broke his neck. And he's been in recovery for a long time. So most of that conversation revolved around his injury and the recovery involved. And that was the most fascinating part, was getting into the real nuts and bolts about recovery and adjusting his diet and going to all these different types of doctors and even healers. That was fascinating to me. Brand new podcast that just launched recently was called it's called The Truth Barrel. And it's Gabby Reese is one of the co-hosts. Laird Hamilton's wife.
Yeah, who's?
She's the co-host.
But who's the producer of the show?
Her and this other guy, Neil Strauss. The Truth Barrel.
The Truth Barrel.
And the reason why it's called The Truth Barrel is that they conduct the interviews in a sauna, in a barrel sauna. So
sounds like it's dangerous.
It's very dangerous.
Can't you get electrocuted?
I don't know. It's very dangerous, but the idea, the whole concept behind the show is...
It's a cool concept.
Her and Laird do this sauna...
Treatment.
Transition from sauna into cold water
plunge. Right, cryotherapy, yeah.
And so in this sauna, they found over the course of years of inviting friends into it... A lot of truth comes out. Within 5 minutes
in there... Is there wine involved? Is there like a glass of wine?
No. So within the 5 minutes of being in there, people just start pouring out their heart because they're just like in this intense situation. And so they decided like, hey, it'd be interesting to actually record these conversations. And of course they're hanging out with luminaries,
right?
Like they're in Malibu, they're friends with all these who's who. So the first episode was actually with Greg Long. They did an episode with Laird. Of course they did a recent episode with Mark Healy, and what I have found listening to the Truth Barrel is the audio quality is horrible because recording it in a sauna. So
is it echoey?
It's echoey and it's just weird sounding. And
they know they're being recorded, so it takes some of the truth out of the barrel.
Maybe so. Maybe so. And the other thing is, like, this guy Neil Strauss and Gabby aren't that great of interviewers.
Oh, really? Do they hassle for time on the mic or something?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. And so I don't love it, but there's real potential there. And the fact that they're even having a conversation with Mark Healy, I'm going to listen, you know, because of that.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have a connection with Mark, and I'm supposed to get him on the show at some point. Our schedules haven't been able to align. Yeah. But I'm just realizing now, if he recorded the Truth Barrel, that means he was in California recently.
Healy.
Dude, he transitioned over to Gabby Reese. By the way, their show only has 16 reviews on iTunes. Mine has 97. So
wow, how many does mine have?
Little did Mark know, he went small time by going with them. He should have been over on Surf Splendor.
Now you got me thinking. I'm going to have to go see how many reviews. Mine are all probably bad.
No. You have 49.
You're kidding. That's
a solid
all?
Amount. It's a solid amount, dude.
Oh, shit, for 11 years?
So at any rate, for listeners who need more content, Scott and I are producing 90 minutes of content every other week. And then I'm producing an hour on the off weeks oftentimes, but sometimes skipping those even. So if you want more content, it's out there. The Truth Barrel, The Kyle Tierman Show, Kill the Messenger, and The Awkcast. And there's a couple others, too, that you could find. But those are all ones that have been on my radar recently.
I got an email from Ken Kaufman who says that he loves the show. Thanks for keeping the podcast coming. That donation is coming from him shortly. His annual bonus is going to hit mid-January.
Sweet.
So thanks, Ken Kaufman.
Thanks for sharing the love, buddy.
For your donation to the show to keep it going. That's sort of a smart segue there. Appreciate
Super
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
So let's update listeners on the Lunada Bay situation.
Yeah.
There's a big event happening there this Monday.
What's going on at Lunada Bay? Are we going to have a picnic?
The Ride Anything event.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's putting it on?
Chris Taloa. Our old buddy.
Chris, the guy from Hawaii?
Yeah.
The boogie board?
Chris Wan?
Yeah.
Like he's been the
he's
big,
probably stoked on this whole thing.
Well, he's been the big proponent over the years, and right. I interviewed him on this show.
I know, and I think we interviewed him together, didn't we?
No, I think you might have previously about something else, but I did about the Lunada Bay situation.
Yeah.
And so since then, a lot has transpired, but they've renamed he and his group of friends have renamed Lunada Bay Aloha Point. So there's an Aloha Point Facebook page that you can go be a part of. And as all this legal stuff has taken place and the Lunada Bay's fort has been knocked down and then the patio structure. And then
I've got a funny story about the patio.
The Bay Boys retaliated by vandalizing all of the equipment that was being used to demo that stuff. So then the city hired, you know, security guards to guard that equipment. It's been a lot of back and forth, but the structure's been torn down. And now this coming Monday, Martin Luther King Day, people have organized a Ride Anything event where they're bringing soft tops, knee boards, rafts, inner tubes, every flotation device you could imagine, and going to paddle them out at renamed Aloha Point and have a fun day, Martin Luther King Day.
That's pretty gnarly. That's a pretty good story, man. That's going to be interesting. I didn't know anything about that.
What
Ride
is your
anything.
Story?
What's the exact date on Ride Anything at Aloha Point, a.k.a. Lunada Bay?
Martin Luther King Day is January 16th.
Oh, that's in 5 days, this Saturday.
That's what I'm saying.
There could be waves.
Let's hope.
Is that this Saturday, the 16th? Today's the 11th. It's Wednesday. No, that's
Saturday the 16th. I just looked at the calendar.
I just heard through the grapevine that one of the local guys down there had a picture of the patio painted, and they took the artist's rendition and put it on a T-shirt and sold it is selling it at the little arts commercial retail area in Palos Verdes.
Oh, really?
Like, you know, just like there's a coffee shop and like a yoga studio, and this guy sells knickknacks, and one of the knickknacks is this T-shirt. And it says something like save the patio or remember the patio or something like that. And another one of his buddies who's like a hardcore, they're both hardcore Lunada guys. Another one of his buddies is all butthurt at the guy. He's like, you're selling out the patio. And there's like a feud within the crew based on, that's how myopic and immature these guys are.
It's Bayboy on Bayboy.
Bayboy on Bayboy, butthurt Bayboy on butthurt Bayboy about the most silliest little t-shirt where they're maybe selling four of them, you know?
BHBB.
And the whole thing is, you sold out the patio. You're a dick for selling out the patio.
Amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
The other bit of gossip that I have in regard to that was just that, like, one of, I don't even know the guys' names who are involved or allegedly Bayboys or whatever, but kind of one of the main troublemakers who is responsible for some of the violence and vandalism of visitors' cars and stuff like that. He's basically been booted out by the other quote unquote Bayboys, where they were just like, dude, like, we want to protect this spot, but we're not really down with the violence. So, and now we're getting a lot of heat from government and like the local authorities, like, you're not allowed to surf here anymore. So, you know, there's been a division among the Bay Boys themselves. I think we've given that topic way too much conversation over the course of the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Who gives a crap?
Let's move on.
I've
got some must-see moments.
Yeah. Well, I've got a specific must-see moment, but I have one that barely didn't make the cut, which is on Stab Magazine. It's called Bouncing. It's a feature on Brendan Gibbons. So do you remember Stab did the Stab in the Dark with Dane Reynolds?
Yeah.
Where they had 30 different or 20 different surfboards, maybe 12. I don't know. I don't know the number.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of different surfboards that Dane rode to try to anonymously shaped surfboards to try to figure out which one was the best shortboard.
Yeah.
Well, Dane wasn't the only surfer on that trip. There was another surfer on that trip that didn't make the cut for the final edit, just didn't fit the narrative and the storyline, but they just released an edit of that surfer riding those boards that Dane was riding. And Brendan Gibbons is his name. He's a South African surfer from Cape Town, but I spent a month with Brendan a couple of years ago when he was here with Quicksilver. He used to be on Quicksilver. He's on Vistula now, but I spent a month with him and we, you know, drove around surfing and eating all our meals together and stuff. Like, and we actually went to Costa Rica together as well. So I knew Brendan for a period of time. I haven't talked to him since, but I've always followed his career because of our time together. And I've always felt like the kid shreds. Dude, this video is unreal. Like, he surfs so good. So this video, Bouncing on Stab, I'll have a link to it on Surf Splendor Podcast. He's a guy who's he's not a huge self-promoter. He's actually really reserved. And I think that has been a detriment to his career. Like, he's highly regarded, and obviously he's hanging out with Dane Reynolds, but he's just not fully promoting himself. But his level of surfing is far beyond guys who get a lot more acclaim than he gets. So this video, I think, was really well done, and I was glad to see that his surfing is the best that it's ever been. Does huge alley-oops that he lands perfectly buttery or like corrupt flips, actually the alley-oop rotation, but hold grabbing double rail. But the grab is actually opposite rails than you would normally grab for a double rail grab. And then he does those club sandwich turns that we've seen Dane do and Josh Kerr and a couple other guys. And he does them so fast and so inverted. It's really, really, it's like a one motion. It's really impressive. So Bouncing by Brendan Gibbons is my first video recommendation of the week. What do you got?
Well, I've got one. It's on Surfline right now. It's also on boardroomshow.com. I put it up yesterday. And it's Levi Slauson, 13-year-old Grom. And I put it up because the kid rips, but he's also a good friend of mine, and his brother and his dad and his whole family and his whole crew. I've been seeing Levi, you know, for years now, and he's really starting to come into his own. And he, like I said, he mobs up with a crew of guys that's all surf seaside. His brother Noah Slauson, Micah and Caleb Crozier, Kobe Gilchrist, and I just put it up there. It's super cool. It's kind of a cool song, too.
Is it all in San Diego?
No, there's some Mexico. Okay. And I think there's one or two on the South Shore of Hawaii. But
okay.
It's pretty cool. Levi Slauson. 13-year-old Grom. That's, and then my other must-see moment is Yaden Nickel in Morocco.
I didn't watch
which Channel Islands put out on Instagram. It's sick.
Is it?
Yeah. Yaden's one of those guys I would love to see back on tour. Yeah. And I think he's worthy. I mean, look at what he did at Pipe those years where he probably should have beat Kelly in a couple of heats or whoever, Parko, or
there was a
Mick Fanning.
There was a heat
Yaden versus Mick Fanning in the semis. Yeah. That everyone thought Yaden should have got the 9-8 and they gave him a 9-6 or something. It was
he got the steep and deep one, whereas Mick got the roll in off third.
That's right, at the very end. Yeah. That was an interesting.
Mick winning that heat won the world title.
Yeah. But Yaden Nickel, when he's free surfing in Morocco, these beautiful right points, and it's pretty cool. I've been to Morocco, so it brought back some fun memories. And if you haven't been to Morocco.
No, I haven't.
You need to go to Morocco. If you're a regular foot surfer or you just love going right, you need to go to Morocco.
Okay.
And this has been a hell of a good season in Morocco. The Atlantic's been firing. All these swells at Mundaka. All this shit that's been happening. All that stuff ends up down at Morocco. So.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll... Maybe that'll be next on my list. I'm actually going to Cuba next month.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
They opened it up for Americans, obviously, to travel there. And so I mentioned that just for any listeners who have been or who have any insight at all, email me. The website is surfsplendorpodcast.com, but you can email me hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com.
Cuba. Yeah. When are you going to Cuba?
Next month.
Oh, yeah. I think right now it's good. I think it takes north swells, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about the surf scene there. I'm going just to, like...
Get drunk.
Get the Cuban culture before it gets diluted by Cuban American culture. Tourism. You know, like, I want the real shot of Cuba, dude.
What does that mean? Does that mean Havana Club rum and cigars?
Like, I personally...
Driving around in, like, lowrider, 1957 Chevy lowriders.
That's more what it is. Yeah, like, I don't really... I'm not, like, into rum or cigars, but I will participate while I'm there, but that's not the reason.
You're gonna play dominoes in an alley and drink...
Yeah.
Rum and smoke cigars and
read Hemingway
and probably like chirp at hot chicks walking by or something That's so wrong.
That's the entire objective of the trip. Wow. But no,
do that in Compton.
The idea is though to again get ahead of the Cuban culture before it gets diluted with a bunch of imports and tourism and stuff like that. So any listeners who have any Cuba insight, hook a brother up.
What does it cost to fly to Cuba?
So cheap, dude.
Like $250 round trip or something?
$320. Round trip.
Stop in Miami?
No stop.
No stop?
Non-stop.
That's killer.
Direct flight from LAX, 320. And hotel.
On who? On like American or United?
Alaska.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My brother flies for Alaska.
Oh, really?
I'm going. Buddy pass. You.
And Airbnbs are like under $50. Like it's crazy cheap.
What a trip you think.
So why wouldn't you go? You know what I mean? So...
Abject poverty, perhaps?
So you don't travel to impoverished countries? You just mentioned Morocco. You've been to Mexico.
Morocco's rich.
Well, the history is rich.
King, dude. It's a kingdom.
Well, so my must-see moment, back to must-see moments, is Northern Praying Mantis. Have you seen that?
No.
Classic title from none other than our friend Mason Ho. Mason Ho just dropped a brand new edit.
Is this where he wipes out on the reef at Rock Pile?
Yeah, that's every edit.
It kind of is. Huh?
Yeah, this is almost exclusively novelty waves, and it's so rad. Some of it's Rock Pile. Some of it's just these weird backwash waves where he'll like take off on the outgoing wave and then surf into the incoming wave, jumping off rocks into like doing acid drops onto waves. A lot of really, really fun looking cool stuff. But then they also show the couple of big days at Pipeline that they had right around Christmas time with him getting unbelievable barrels at Pipe. And then also Michael Ho gets a couple of super sick ones. Coco gets a couple. So really great edit. We always love Mason Ho's edits, but this one's great. Northern Praying Mantis is the name of it.
You know, for the sake of the listeners, last time I read that soliloquy on me cutting off Hipster Graham Icon, who's just a pseudonym for a name of a guy that I dropped in on. And so you and I were talking before the show, but I wanted to tell listeners. So a friend of mine paddled up to me yesterday and we're like, hey, how's it going? He's like, hey, how's it going? And he goes, hey, I saw Hipster Graham Icon yesterday at the Agenda Trade Show. And I'm like, oh, really? Yeah. And he goes, yeah, we were talking And I said, where have you been surfing? And he goes, Scott Bass cut me off. And I just started laughing. But more importantly, as I mentioned in the last show, he's got video of the wave where I dropped in on him. And he told my friend, he goes, yeah, and I'm holding on to it. And I'm going to use it against him when he least expects it. So he's holding on to this footage to somehow besmirch my reputation.
I can't wait to see it, dude. So without revealing too much, this is an icon on Instagram. A quote-unquote icon. Like, it's a guy who has a lot of followers who does post videos of himself surfing on Instagram.
Yes.
And so listeners might actually know who this guy is. And we're just waiting to see that video. That video will appear at some point.
Yes, at some point it's going to appear. And I don't want, again, he's a friend of mine. I consider him a friend, so I didn't want to reveal his name.
Though you're the bad guy in this scenario.
Well, I've certainly acknowledged that what I did wasn't correct.
Bad guy by your own estimation.
Right.
Yeah. You're the one taking
understanding
fault.
That there was some
precursor to you burning him.
Which was
him burning you.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, but the video. I wonder if he has video of him burning you too. And he's just not going to reveal that.
It's on the cutting room floor.
He'll only post the video of you burning him. So I have a Duke and a Kook.
Okay.
I'm going to lead with the Kook.
Yes.
We'll end on the high note. So my Kook is a real tentative Kook. I'm not fully committed to it.
Yeah.
But I want to just throw this.
This is going to get you in trouble, I can tell.
Well, I want to throw it out there in advance and we can revisit it over the course of time. The hydrofoil boards.
Yes.
It's really suspect to me.
Yes.
Like when Laird Hamilton's developing it, okay, you're out in the middle of nowhere on Maui. Like, I get it.
Yes.
Kai Lenny starts doing it. It's like, okay, cool. That works.
Yes.
Because he's Kai Lenny. Now I'm starting to see no-name Joe Blow guys going 30 miles an hour with this blade, this steel blade, cutting through the water.
Yes.
In crowded lineups, doing cutbacks around guys, dodging.
Where, in Huntington?
Guys. No. I actually haven't seen it in person, but I've started to see videos online.
Oh, because I posted one on my Instagram of Dave Kalama.
Is that where you saw it? That was one of them that I saw.
I'm going to give Dave Kalama a pass.
Gets a pass.
Yeah. But there's a guy at Cardiff that's doing it.
Is he?
Yeah. His name's Chuck. He's a good friend of mine. He's
in
a really good surfer.
Lineup.
Yeah. He's a good surfer. He's actually, I think he's like Laird's nephew or something. Mm. Like he's related to Laird somehow.
Mm.
And he was over there on Maui with those guys doing it. And he brought one back. And I saw him doing it the other day in the crowded lineup. And somebody on Facebook, another friend of his, said, hey, that's cool and all that, but please don't do that around us. Like, go down the beach somewhere
exactly.
And do it.
So that's my thought. I hate to like, I'm not going to shame all stand-up paddlers or all bodyboarders or everybody who does something other than what I do. Like, I'm okay with it, and there's a place for it.
Where do you draw the line?
Well, I heard, this is all just through rumor, but I heard that a swimmer got decapitated in France.
Really?
Yeah. A guy who was just swimming, a swimmer.
Yeah.
And one of those guys was burning, again, 30 miles an hour through the lineup with this steel blade, fully decapitated because the thing is sharp.
Cut his head off. That's got to be online somewhere. We got to Google that. That's something that you would see online. Like, that's pretty big news.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but by the way, maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it's just, maybe it's an urban legend.
Right.
But you have to realize that the physics are there. Like, that can happen easily.
Oh, yeah.
The speed that thing's going and the sharpness of it will cut through flesh, no problem.
Yeah.
So, it's only a matter of time until something like that happens. So they're not an outright kook yet, but I do want them to exercise some judgment.
Discretion.
Like, don't surf Cardiff with the thing, dude. Like, go surf down the beach where there's nobody out. And by the way, it looks super fun. Like, I actually want to do it. I just want to go do it at crowded Huntington, you know?
Yeah.
So, let's keep an eye on that, Scott. We'll revisit them in the Kook section in coming weeks or months or years. My Duke, Kepa Acero.
Yes.
Have you seen what's happened with him?
No, what's happened with Kepa?
He narrowly escaped death at Mundaka. He had a shallow water wipeout.
I did see this, yeah.
Shallow water wipeout, broke his neck. Thankfully, it didn't sever his spinal cord, and he was able to be rescued by surfers who were in the lineup who fashioned a raft out of multiple surfboards and got him out of the impact zone, got him into the beach, but he was in like really devastating pain. And when he was underwater, he was actually aware that he had broken his neck.
Oh my God.
And couldn't feel his hands, couldn't feel his legs, thought that he actually wouldn't even resurface. But thankfully, he actually doesn't remember anything else. But ultimately, he resurfaced. His buddies fashioned a raft, got him out of the impact zone, got him to the beach, which is where he remembers coming to consciousness again. And then he had a horrifically painful, miserable couple of hours until he made it to the hospital. And again, thankfully, the spinal cord was not damaged. So he was able to regain feeling in his body and be able to move his arms and his legs. He's making a full recovery in the hospital. Horrific, horrific wipeout, though. Shallow water slammed his neck into the sand.
Cool, so, man.
So he's the Duke because...
He is a Duke.
Not because of the injury. The injury reminds me that he's a Duke. He's a Duke because... I don't know if people remember his story, but he became famous by publishing YouTube videos of himself traveling from Spain to like South Africa or to Morocco by himself. And then he would just set up the camera on a tripod on the beach, not zoomed in or anything. It was just panned out, wide angle, and you'd see these peeling left point break waves going endlessly. And then you'd see him, the only guy in the lineup, dropping in on a left, getting barreled all the way down the line and then coming out, you know, and it'd then be 10 minutes of no waves being surfed and then him getting another one. And he would edit it down into a little bit more manageable footage than that. But he was traveling to these far-flung destinations by himself, self-funded, no sponsor. And then because of that, you know, just him being this nomadic wanderer, Patagonia, or actually I think Reef was the first one that got on board with him because that's part of their brand identity is just passing through.
Yeah.
And they just started funding him. They're like, dude, we love what you're doing and we just want to support you. So he's now on Patagonia, I think, but really rad, good surfer who's just living the dream of traveling on low budget and making it happen. So that's why Kepa Acero is my Duke of the Week and we're shouting out to him and, wishing all the best with his recovery.
Cool, man. Kepa, get, you know, Mundaka's been insane. And Kepa, I hope you get better soon. Mundaka's been, I put some video of Mundaka up on my site, boardroomshow.com. And since then, new footage has come out. But like the week of Christmas was insane in Mundaka. And there's some new stuff out from that session, I think, where Kepa got hurt.
Oh, okay.
And there's plenty of cool Mundaka footage. Recent stuff, which is kind of cool because for a while there, they were like, oh, the sand's gone, it's ruined, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, guess what? Things changed. It's called climate change.
Have you surfed Mundaka?
No.
Yeah.
Never been there.
I've been to the Basque, San Sebastian and all that, but I've never surfed Mundaka.
Well, speaking of that, there's, you know, the Boardroom Show, we're honoring Al Merrick this year, and there's going to be 10 shapers that are competing in the Icons of Foam Shaping competition to honor Al Merrick. And one of them, we're reaching out internationally, and one of them is Johnny I'm gonna mispronounce his
Kabianka?
Name. Yes, Kabianka.
And is it La Kabianka or just Kabianka?
I don't know. I emailed him as Johnny Kabianka.
Okay, got it.
And of course we'd love for him to be one of the shapers, but he lives in the Basque country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Brazilian guy.
Shapes Gabriel Medina's boards.
Oh, okay. Well, look, we reached out to him and he got back to me. He's like, yeah, I'm thinking I'd love to do it. Let me just check my schedule. So he's going to get back to me. And then we reached out to Neil Purchase Jr. And we're going to have the youngest shaper ever in the competition, Zach Flores, who's 16 years old, maybe 17 years old. And he's going to be, although Taz was pretty young when Taz did it, that kid from Canary Islands. I wonder how. Anyway. Zach Flores is going to be shaping and he's 17 years old. So, and of course we've reached out to some others, and I'll just wait until I hear back from them before I bring that up. But
yeah,
pretty excited that we've got a cool international field of shapers that are looking at doing it along with, some domestic regional guys as well.
Yeah. And exciting to be honoring Al Merrick too.
Oh yeah.
It's a good get, man.
Oh, we're super stoked. Yeah. Al's going to be there judging and a big part of the show and it's going to be good.
Super cool.
Yeah, man.
Right on, Scott. Well, hey, nice to reconnect
with you, buddy. How do they get a hold of you?
Well,
listeners,
on
what about donations? Don't we want to pimp the need for donations?
Yeah.
Because we need those. And yeah. What's going on with Patreon? Anything?
We haven't launched it, but so the donation platform is on, you can find it on surfsplendorpodcast.com or on boardroomshow.com. And we've encouraged people to just sign up for a $5 recurring monthly donation, which a lot of people actually have. And when we get a certain number of those, we're going to commit to doing a show every week rather than every other week. So we're slowly working our way towards that. And it's a financial commitment for Scott and I to continue producing this show. It's 45-minute drive for each of us. We meet in the middle. Scott's in San Diego. I'm in Huntington Beach. And then, of course, it takes time out of our actual work day. So, and then there's just actual hard costs involved in terms of server and all that sort of stuff. So we've been doing it. We've been funding it ourselves for a long time now, a number of years, Scott for 10 years, me for 3 years. And so it's been nice to actually get a little bit of revenue coming in to recoup some of those costs and to invest in the future of the show. So you can find that link to donate on surfsplendorpodcast.com or boardroomshow.com. And then you can also email me, David, at hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com, or just leave a comment in the comment section on the website, and then on social media at surfsplendor if you want to see what the chop hop looks like.
And you can email me, surftalksandiego@gmail.com, surftalksandiego@gmail.com. And of course, we have Instagram, Boardroom Show.
Is that what it is?
Twitter, Boardroom Surf.
You make it so confusing for the people, dude.
It's tough. Boardroom.
Yeah.
And then the boardroomshow.com website. You can get a bunch of cool stuff there. Videos, blogs, information about the show, and a whole lot more.
Awesome. Again, thanks for to the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center for letting us use their studio. They've been a great partner for the show.
Yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, adios and aloha.
Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze. And skipping over the ocean like a stone.
As you know, SurfSplendorPodcast.com is the website. Again, you can leave a comment about today's show. Give us feedback. We like to always say that this conversation isn't just between Scott and I. It's actually between everybody. So give us your feedback, and then you can follow us on social media at SurfSplendor, as you are probably well aware of that detail as well. All right? Hope that you enjoyed this show. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of Surf Splendor. Until then, this is David Scales reminding you, get out in the ocean, catch a couple waves, and shred on, my friend. Shred on.
Everybody's talking at me. Can't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.